そう、なんかありますよね。
Hello, good
Hello.
evening. You're
You're
welcome to my initiative once again, Young Productive Man Initiative. My name is Stacy Domani. I'm your host for this episode on What is Your Story? We are talking with women minds and achievers and experts in the field of endeavor. I'm really happy to have one of the leaders of the industry and a good mentor, Mrs. Madhu Lowe. I'm very sure she'll join us shortly. Are you online, ma'am? Hello.
Hello.
Yes. I am. Okay. Mrs. Maddy is with us, so I'm happy to have Mrs. Maddy with us this evening. Mrs. Maddy is the founder and the president of Hope Ambassador and Child Care Organization. And this organization is a faith-based organization, not a profit organization. They provide support and care for the needs of people, especially older, less privileged, and physically handicapped children. Their mission is to exemplify the love of God by meeting the needs of these children spiritually, physically, and emotionally. We are glad to have you, Mrs. Maddy. You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. So this evening today's episode is about What is Your Story. The first episode was My Own Story. So would you share your story? Before then, I would like all of you to know that this program is sponsored by Young Productive Mind Initiative. And we are Young Productive Mind. Young Productive Mind is a network of adorable, lovable, influential, good-hearted, and concerned people of society. We care about the well-being of people, especially the children, youth, and women, and we do everything possible within our capacity to ensure that underprivileged children are nurtured and that youth and women are empowered so that they can be what God has created them to be, and so that they can contribute maximally to the development of self and that of society. So if you want to know more about Productive Mind Initiative, you can check our media pages on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. We are Young Productive Mind Initiative. So, Mrs. Maddy, over to you, ma. Tell us about yourself, ma.
Okay, thank you. This is truly a honor to be part of this program. Thank you so much for inviting me. My name is Maddy Olobu. I am the president founder of Hope Ambassadors and Child Care Organization. I actually read Banking and Finance. And along the line, I was called into philanthropy. It came as a calling. It came as a prophecy to touch the lives of children. Hope Ambassadors. Okay, before I introduce Hope Ambassadors, I am married to Mr. Taiwo Lu. I have three kids. You know, right now, they are adults. And I'm grateful to God. I've been married for about 3 decades. And the ministry actually started about that time, about 3 decades ago. And I'm just grateful to God that he called us into this ministry. So Hope Ambassadors is a faith-based, non-government charity organization with a calling to meet the needs of children. Of people, especially children. We provide succor and care for the needs of the poor, especially orphans, the less privileged, and the physically handicapped children, which you have introduced. Hope Ambassadors has been in the forefront of alleviating and meeting the needs of children and women. We've been empowering women, we've been educating women and children, and renewing their lives. We are best known for our water and hygiene programs.
I saw something like that online on LinkedIn and on NTA News.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
I saw the recent work you did in Kaduna on NTA News and also on LinkedIn.
Okay, yes. So we're best known for our water and hygiene programs. Some years ago, before the advent of Ebola, I'm sure you remember Ebola.
Yes, ma'am.
We got a message, a prophecy came, that we should go around schools and teach people, go around communities, teach people how to wash their hands. Even for me, it was a funny prophecy. I was wondering, how would you go and teach people how to wash hands? But it actually happened the way I'm saying it. We got a prophecy, go around and teach children and go around communities, teaching people the importance of clean water and how to wash their hands properly. So we went out and we did that, and we did it for 1 year. We did it for 1 year, and a month after we stopped. A month after 1 year of going around communities, going around schools, we stopped. And you know, even during those periods where we're going around teaching children, some schools rejected us, some people made fun of us, but we just kept, because a word came, and we usually follow what sending us to do. So we did that for 1 year, and after 1 year, a month exactly after 1 year, came the whole struggle with Ebola. And today, with COVID-19, this is history. Everybody now knows the importance of clean water. Everybody yes. knows the importance of clean hands. We know that clean hands now can save your life. So, you know, that's what we did. So we are known for our wash hygiene programs. When we went around schools for 1 year, we found out that most of the schools that that attended to us, that gave us audience, they didn't have water. So for all those times we're going around schools, we're going with our kegs, we're going with our bowls, and we're teaching them with our kids. So we took it a step further. I said, rather than go, you know, you're just talking theory, let's go there and, you know, give this people water. So we began building hand wash stations. We went around schools building hand wash stations. Some local governments, we built so many hand wash stations in schools. And now we've taken it another further to start sinking boreholes in communities. Now, rather than going to schools to start fetching water from communities, we now decided, okay, let's go and you know, sink boreholes for them, put clean water for them. And, you know, that's where we are right now. Because at the beginning of this year, when we went in, we went to seek the face of God. What direction are you taking us this year?
This year,
and yes. It was clear. Just go and provide clean water for communities. And so for Kaduna now, we've done already two projects. We started in April, we've done two projects. There's another ongoing one in Bauchi right now. We have some sites in Ogun State, we have some sites in Ibadan right now that we want to embark on. So, you know, that's what we are known for. And with the hand wash stations that we built, with the clean water project we started, we've seen that, you know, the spread of diseases have reduced in some of these communities. The last one we did in Kaduna, Zagina community, we were told by the elders in that community that community is about 280 years old, and this is the first borehole they would have.
Ever.
The first, but they have wells. And some of these wells, when you fetch water today, you wait for another 2 days for the water before to gather again before you can fetch another one. So for 280 years. And the truth is that they didn't have any reason to tell us stories. They didn't have any reason to tell us lies. So but that was what they said. And these were elders in the village. So they said for 280 years, this is the first borehole they would ever have. So that's particularly what Hope Ambassadors is about, going into a community, changing the life there, you know, touching lives, putting smiles on the faces of children. Use the opportunity to do most of our advocacy programs, because we also have advocacy programs that we do, like My Body's My Body, like we teach them about the clean hands save lives, and so many other. We talk to them about drug abuse, we talk to them about early marriages. So, you know, those are the things. So those are opportunities for us to go into a community and just change the entire narrative of that community.
Affecting lives in the rural area.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Mandy. Can we know more about your personal background as Mandy Olowo? How did you do that? Did you come from a very big family?
Okay. I came from a very humble family. At seven, I had already lost my mother. So I grew up with my grandmother. And all those years that I was living with my grandmother, I saw her struggle so much, because almost all her grandchildren lived with her. So we're about maybe 14, sometimes more than 14, living with her at a particular time. So, and I noticed that with her mega income, because she was struggling. She was trading with her mega income. She still said, because I was born in the north. So you see, I can understand most of the things happening in the north. I can understand where all these children that walk about the streets, I can understand their life. So my grandmother would feed some of these children on daily basis, every day. These children were feeding from our dumps, you know, they were feeding from dump sites. So they would come to our trash and they would want to feed from there. My grandmother said, don't feed from my trash. You come inside and eat. So every day you see them line up dirty plates. We have to force them to wash those plates before we put food. So on daily basis, she was feeding. We are 14, so she will add another extra amount of 10 or an extra amount of 15, you know, on daily basis. On in the morning when she's going out for to the market or wherever she would go for her to trade, she would stop at all these we call them ear. We call them ear in the north. Those ears are the ones that fry bean cake, that fry akara, locally called akara, or called kose in the north. You know, and they sell this pap. The local one in the north was Kwoko. They call it Kwoko in the north. So she would go there and said, okay, how much do I need to drop for you to give four pieces of bean cake of akara to these children, and a scoop or two of Kwoko of pap of cornmeal to these children. So they will calculate all that, and then she will drop the money. So, and you know, at that time the north was still good, people were still good. They don't want to drop and go. They will feed those children. They will feed them as much as you want. They'll do exactly what you say. So she will do that. So sometimes she feeds in the morning, she feeds about 20 people before she'll go to her to the market to trade, you know. So in the evening she tells you, bring your plate, and you see them line up their plates, and then we feed them. My grandmother didn't have so much, but she had the heart of gold. Mm-hmm. So you know, the passion started for me from there. I looked at these children, and I could feel pity. I could feel love for them. I wanted to change their life. I wanted to help them. And so it started. When I got married, I was fortunate to marry a man who had the same vision.
Same heart.
Who had the same heart. Who felt, oh, my husband would not see somebody that is hungry. He was ready to share his food. He was ready to give his last penny to put a smile on somebody's face. So I was fortunate to marry that kind of man. And so we started the ministry. Along the line, a message came from the church to us. Look, go out there and touch the lives of people, change the lives of people. Even when we didn't understand it, because we already started it already, but we didn't understand the message coming, you just go there and make that difference. Okay, we took it back to God. Oh Lord, how do you want us to make that difference? And so on yearly basis, we come back to him and say, which direction are you taking us? He took us through the direction of go and teach children how to wash their hands. That was a funny one, but we did, and see what came out of it. This year he has told us, you go in and they provide water for communities. And you know, we're doing that, and I know this is just the beginning. So what happened, and we've been doing this for 3 decades, and it's been glorious. It's been a great joy. It's been a great passion for us, you know, just seeing people changing their lives, impacting them. We have different programs for women. We've empowered different women. Today we look at them, and we're grateful to God that he used us to change the life of some of these women. We've looked at children on scholarship. We've seen them grow, and we say, oh God, how did this happen? But God has used us mightily to change the lives of these children. So we're really grateful that God gave us.
You are really making great impact. And that is one thing about you being led by the Spirit of God. Like it was this, that as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. And your organization, yourself, and your partner, Mr. Taiwo, you are doing a great job. So Ma, this thing, I would like you to advise the youth, especially girl child, or especially those that are having it rough, those that are not born in a rich family. What word do you have for them?
Okay. One of the major problems is you thinking that you have, you're from a rich family, or you're born with a silver spoon. I was not born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I was not, my word, average. I came from an average family. The first thing is try to focus. I always wanted to be better than where my parents were, or where what I came to understand about who they were. I wanted to be better than my father. I wanted to be better than my grandmother. I knew there was no way I would live like that in such a mediocre kind of life. So I trained myself. I decided I was going to educate myself, and up to this moment I'm still educating myself. I'm still learning. I'm still teaching myself the things that I didn't know. I'm still trying to go back to school. I'm still trying to do courses get certification on different things that I have interest on. So the first thing I would advise a girl child, for you being a girl in Africa, there's a disadvantage already. There is a disadvantage, so you're not going to look at those things. You're not going to look at those things. For example, when we go for advocacy in the north especially, we tell them about you marrying off your girl child.
Really?
I'll tell you a story of a woman we met some years back in Lagos here. It was on a Sunday. I was in church and a letter was brought to me. When I opened the letter, I said to myself, you see, all these people, they think you have grants from somewhere. I was not interested in that case. I said, they think you have grants. I don't have grants from anywhere. Everything you see us do, it's from our own pocket, or friends that say, oh, I want to buy into your vision. Families that say, oh, I love this thing that you do, let us support. That's just it. There's no grants from anywhere. If we see grants today, we'll be grateful, because we'll do that means we'll do more boreholes in more communities. But we don't have that yet. So they brought this letter to me, and I said to them, I said, well, I don't have grants too. I don't know what they're talking about. But my husband said, look, why don't you look at it? Look at this. Because why I was not interested, the woman was at that time 40 something years old. I think 46, she said, or 44 years old. And she said she had vesicular vaginal fistula. Now, vesicular vaginal fistula, from what I understand, because I was born in the north, is that from my little understanding at that time, was that when you go and marry too early, you marry 9 years to a man of 42 years, her system is not ready for all those things. Her pelvic is not ready to carry a child. Even her vagina is not even ready to take in any man. And then you take her and you marry her off to a 40 something years old, a 60 year old, she's forced to start having sex, and then she becomes pregnant. Then her system is not ready. So when it's time to give birth, they force her to push, and then her system is
affected.
Everything just is affected, and then she cannot control urine. So that was my simple understanding of what VVF was. Now, a woman was telling me she's 46 years old in Lagos State. This is not one village somewhere, in Lagos State. And I felt that was a lie. So, but you know, my husband said, you go and check it out. Nobody's forcing you to do anything. So I did. I went to this woman, and the minute I met her, nobody needed to tell me that she had VVF. The stench from the woman was crazy. So anyway, we decided, okay, what do we do to help this woman? We asked her some questions. She brought out a lot of tests that she had done, and I spoke to her doctor. I'm just trying to cut the story short. I spoke to her doctor. She has been going to Luth. And we decided, okay, how much do we need? If you need to hear the very funny amount of money that this woman had had VVF for 26 years. Oh, it was so mind-boggling. I said, is it because of just this amount of money this woman has suffered for 26 years? It was very painful for me. So we decided, okay, whatever it takes, we're going to do something for this woman. And then when we agreed, I caught up to the doctor. We're supposed to transfer some money into the account, and they would take her in. And my husband asked me, but your own gynecologist worked in Luth. Why don't you talk to him first? So I called my doctor, and he said, look, don't waste your money in Luth. Luth cannot handle VVF. I said, if Luth cannot handle it, nobody can handle it in Nigeria now. He said, that because those cases are not so much in Lagos State, so they're not used to those kind of surgery. But I should go and Google. There's some white people that came into Nigeria some years back that I should Google. He gave me a name. I went to the internet. I Googled and I found out that name he gave me, that the woman was late. But then they said there was another name I saw on internet, and I called, and there was a number. So I called that number, and they responded, and they said this particular white man was in Katsina. I grew up in Katsina. I got married from Katsina. I lived in Katsina with my grandmother. So what I did was I called some of the people I still know in Katsina. I said, go to the general hospital and check out this man for me. And they did. When they checked him out, they said, and they gave me a number. I talked to the matron at the hospital. She said, look, if they have not operated on your patient, it is free. I said, can you imagine? 26 years, this woman, something they can do free. She has suffered for 26 years. 26 years, everybody left her. Her own case was childbirth. And she you know, it prolonged childbirth. I think she was struggling for almost 7 days. How would you let a woman suffer so much when you can just open her up and bring out the child?
Maybe she wants to TBA or faith-based organization.
You know, all this traditional, yes, I'm sure maybe that's where she went to. So anyway, the husband left her, everybody left her. It was one old man that, you know, said, come and be managing one side of the house. The house was, you know, just poverty, everything about her, everything was just poverty, everything. You could just read it that she was suffering. Anyway, I told her, what are the options we have? We bring her to Katsina, or is there any place? They said, no, the man travels every 2 weeks. So the nearest place to us would have been Ebonyi, that he goes to Ebonyi. The woman said she doesn't want to hear East. And I didn't know anybody in the East, but I know people in the North that I can, okay, please help me check this person, help me help this person. So we decided and took the option of Zaria. And we took her there. You will not believe that. By the time they got to Zaria, she was number 400 and something.
I spoke to the
matron in Zaria, because they gave me her number now in Zaria again. So I spoke to her. She said, that's in the way I spoke, that she likes it, that she's going to help my patient. And they put her as number 8. That once they do her test, they've not touched her, she will be number 4. And that was what happened. They have not operated on this woman before. And so when they checked her as number 8, she went in for tests. She came out, they've not this thing. They put her as number 4. And they did this surgery. Today, the woman is brand new. You cannot believe this woman. But anytime I look at her picture from when I met her and what she is today, I only shed tears of joy.
Wow.
She's brand new. She is brand new. You won't believe that woman. So, you know, so the things about a girl child, there's no rush. The things we see right now is heartbreaking. Everybody's in a rush. You want to do the things that you're not supposed to do at a particular age. The North, they want to marry off their children. In the South, the children want to make money by any means.
Pastor,
I have a case right now they brought to me. I've not even visited the school yet. These are small children in primary school. They are already using drugs. There's a group using drugs. The other ones, a particular day, I think it's Tuesdays and Thursdays, they don't wear pants. They don't wear brassiere to school. They come naked and they sleep with these boys. I said, my
size school.
Hey, this is primary school. This is not secondary school. This is primary school. So those are the things. So for a girl child, for being a girl, there's a disadvantage already. They see you as, this one is a girl and all that. So that is why you have to strive very hard. Read. Educate yourself. You know, educate yourself. Prove that you can do those things they say that you cannot do. You understand? They need to focus on their education. Focus on their education. There's nowhere that in the Bible or in the Quran that says a girl child cannot be anything. So let them focus. That's my advice for them. Let them focus. Parents, treat your girls. In fact, it's because we ignore the boys and try to train the girls. We train them how to run a home. We train them how, when they get married, they can cook. We leave our boys. And that's where the problem is right now in the world. The boys are not trained. They don't know how to handle their feelings. What happens when I start to get the urge when I see a girl? What happens? You tell a girl, what if, when you see a guy cross your leg like this, don't sit on his lap, don't go this way, don't do this. When he touches you, you scream. We teach girls like that, but we don't teach the boys. What do you do when you have those urge? And the old urge will come. Those feelings will come.
We need to, the word now is, we need to train both boys and girls so that we can have a better
boys and girls. Word. And because we don't train them, that is why you see that confidence that, oh, let me chat up a girl. Like during our own time, they chat up a girl, they take dictionary and write big grammar to write letters to girls. Now they don't do, what they want to do is that invite them to parties, put drugs in their drink, rape them. That's what's the thing now. They want to smoke something. That's the only way to get about their confidence, and that is very troubling. That is very that should worry every mother. So yes, we will train our girls. We will teach them what to do when guys come. When they want to, we always tell them how to sit down, what to do. Our boys too. We should train them. How do you handle a girl? How do you treat a girl? Most of the things we see today, broken homes, is because of those guys are from broken homes. Those guys have broken themselves. They have no healed, and they go into a relationship, and then the same pattern they saw, the same pattern, they put it on this one, and the homes are broken, and then the thing continues like that.
Yeah.
This is something we reached a stage where we should be worried.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Mandy. I wish we had a longer time to for today's episode, but we don't. I really appreciate you, and I'm happy that you are part of this evening's episode. And I want to thank the other persons that joined. Mrs. Issa, I can see you. Mrs. Ladiga, thank you very much. Dr. Janet, thank you very much. I don't know if any one of us have questions for Mrs. Mandy before we close the curtain. Any question or any additional from any of us?
Okay, good evening.
Good evening.
Okay, I have a question for Mrs. Mandy. Okay. I really appreciate your contribution to the podcast. I really entertained it. I just want to ask that, what was the process of you really
Sorry, I didn't get that. It's cracking.
Okay, sorry. Do you have like a criteria for enrolling your organization?
Okay, if I have a criteria for someone to join my organization.
For enrolling less privilege into your organization, into your program.
Okay, the less privilege. Yes. No. We do. We just ascertain where the need is, and then the person can be part of the organization. You know. Okay. Yes. We just ascertain where the need is, and then we advise.
The next thing to do. Okay. Yes. Mrs. Labida, any parting word? Any question? Addition? If there's no Mrs. Issa. Mrs. Mandy, I want to thank you once again for coming on this podcast, Young Productive Initiative. And we hope that we will call you next time, you will oblige to join us once again. Thank you for coming, and definitely. Everyone, thank you for coming. And next episode is going to be What Is Your Story? We're going to bring another guest on. And I wish that we will all join next episode. Thank you very much. You have a lovely evening and a restful
Thank you too. Night. Thank you. It's indeed an honor. God bless you. Bye-bye. You.